Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm David Byrd reporting the holiday season is upon us, and President Obama urged Americans to be vigilant but not fearful. Mr. Obama sought to reassure Americans about the security at home after the terror attacks in Paris and in San Bernardino, California. Speaking at the National Counterterrorism Center in suburban Virginia Thursday, the president said that Americans should remember there are what he called dedicated patriots working around the clock to protect them.
We're doing more with countries around the world, including our European partners, to prevent the flow of foreign terrorist fighters, both to places like Syria and Iraq and back into our countries.
The president has ordered investigators to leave no stone unturned as they work to learn how and why, that is, the San Bernardino attacks were carried out. Meanwhile, the man who bought the guns for the couple who massacred 14 people in California 2 weeks ago has been charged with supporting terrorists, lying about the gun purchase, and immigration fraud. The FBI arrested Enrique Marquez on Thursday. He faces up to 35 years in prison if convicted on all the charges. Marquez legally bought the weapons he gave to Syed Rizwan Farooq and his Pakistani-born wife, Tashfeen Malik. They later used them to murder 14 people. Investigators determined that Marquez originally purchased the guns to use in a terrorist plot that he and Farooq had drawn up in 2012. The United Nations Security Council has unanimously adopted a resolution to strengthen and expand measures to cut off funds to the self-proclaimed Islamic State. The measure criminalizes a broad range of financial transactions. This is VOA News. An independent review panel has found that the way the United Nations handled allegations of sexual abuse by peacekeepers in the Central African Republic was seriously flawed and a gross institutional failure. The three-member panel, headed by Canadian Judge Marie Deschamps, handed over its more than 100-page report Thursday to UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who made it public. Deschamps says the head of the Human Rights and Justice section of the mission in the CAR was guilty of abuse of authority, that is, for not protecting children at risk.
Not only did this show abuse of authority by senior officials on an individual basis, but it also highlights deficiencies at an institutional level.
The panel recommended that alleged abuses by peacekeepers should be seen as a form of conflict-related sexual violence and addressed under UN human rights policies. Meanwhile, human rights officials from the UN warned that Burundi is on the verge of civil war and the international community must take action to avert a looming catastrophe. From Geneva, Lisa Schlein reports.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zayed Raad Al Hussein opened an emergency session of the Human Rights Council by describing escalating atrocities, intimidation, and hate speech in Burundi, saying it harked back to that country's deeply troubled, dark, and horrendously violent past.
Burundi is at bursting point on the very cusp of a civil war.
The High Commissioner said at least 400 people have been killed since April 26th when Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza announced his intentions to run for a third term. Lisa Schlein, Geneva.
Niger's resilient President Mahamadou Issoufou says that his government has foiled a coup attempt and arrested several senior military officials. In a nationwide television appearance Thursday, Issoufou said the plotters attacked the presidential palace with military helicopters just as Independence Day celebrations were underway. A former military chief of staff was among those arrested. Niger is a major Western ally in the fight against Islamic extremists, including Boko Haram. On Wall Street, stocks traded lower Thursday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 1.4%, while the Standard & Poor's was down 1.5%. The NASDAQ Composite Index dropped 1.4%. European markets finished trading higher. Asian shares were down. For more on these stories, please log on to our website, voanews.com. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is unhappy about sexual abuse allegations by UN peacekeepers in the Central African Republic.
Sexual exploitation and abuse of power have no place, least of all, in the United Nations, which stands for the rights of the world's women and children.
Rwandans in Rwanda are voting today in a national referendum that would allow President Paul Kagame to run for a third seven-year term in 2017. Rival Libyan parliaments have signed a national unity agreement, and a new survey reveals the priorities of people in 36 African countries.
It would appear that across the African continent, the topmost problem that people want their governments to address is unemployment.
Boniface Dulani is Afrobarometer's fuel operations manager in Malawi. West African leaders are urged to ban Muslim women wearing of the hijab, and Amnesty International criticizing Ethiopia's government for its crackdown on protesters in the Oromia region. Those stories, plus Mark Omar Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. An independent review panel has found that the way in which the United Nations handled allegations of sexual abuse by peacekeepers in the Central African Republic was seriously flawed and what it called a gross institutional failure. Viewer's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations headquarters in New York.
Sexual exploitation and abuse of power have no place, least of all, in the United Nations, which stands for the rights of the world's women and children.
The UN chief expressed his anger in August over allegations of sexual abuse by international peacekeepers in the Central African Republic. That same day, he dismissed the head of the mission. Later, a three-person review board investigated the UN response to the charges that peacekeepers had abused several children, offering them food or money in exchange for sex. The panel released its report on Thursday, its chair saying there had been gross institutional failures.
Instead of reporting the allegations on an urgent manner, as the egregiousness of the alleged conduct dictated, they were kept quiet.
Most of the accused were French soldiers serving with a force outside of UN control. The panel said that did not absolve the organization of responsibility to assist and protect the victims.
And for the victim, there is no difference between peacekeeper who is under UN command or when he or she is raped.
UN Chief Ban said in a statement that he accepts the broad findings of the panel's report and that he would carefully study their recommendations. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Libyan leaders from the country's two rival parliaments signed a national unity agreement in the Moroccan resort town of Skhirat after a number of final obstacles were worked out. A new prime minister was also named, as Edward Urania reports for VOA from Cairo.
The crowd clapped and chanted, "Libya, Libya, Libya," as the deputy speakers of the country's two rival parliaments signed the National Unity Accord, then embraced and raised their arms in the air together in a gesture of solidarity. The agreement is an attempt to end the instability that has marred Libya since the 2011 ouster of longtime leader Muammar Gaddafi. It calls for a new unity government within 40 days, with members from the internationally recognized government in Tobruk and the Islamist-backed body in Tripoli. Morocco's foreign minister, Salah Eddine Mezwar, who presided over the signing ceremony, told the crowd the accord had been concluded amid an atmosphere of optimism and that Libyans will now begin to apply the agreement, beginning with its security provisions. He says Libya is facing internal and external threats it must deal with, and that while it is not ideal, the unity government will open the door for the different parties to build Libya's new institutions, security and stability. UN Special Envoy for Libya, Martin Kobler, introduced the head of the country's new unity government, Fayez Sarraj, and stressed he has a difficult task in front of him.
I don't envy you. There is a heavy workload in front of the government. There is first the national reconciliation in the country. There is second the security situation. There's the problem of terrorism and the fight against the Daesh. This has to be addressed on an urgent basis.
Kobler went on to insist the United Nations would stand beside the new Libyan government, which will need to deal with the horrible humanitarian situation in Benghazi and the many refugees in various parts of the country. He added the United Nations would help with a reconstruction fund. Sarraj, the new prime minister, thanked the international community for its efforts in bringing together the Libyan parties and urged everyone to cooperate. He says there is optimism now, but the upcoming period will require the effort and participation of everyone. He insists there must be no spirit of victor or vanquished. Sarraj will head a 9-member governing council as well as a presidential council that will have the authority to appoint and dismiss ministers. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV reported an Italian general would be in charge of overseeing security for the new government as it establishes itself in the capital, Tripoli. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Rwandans are voting today, Friday, in a national referendum that could allow President Paul Kagame to remain in power for another 18 years. Observers predict a strong turnout and a vote in favor of the proposed constitutional changes. Nick Long has more from Goma in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo.
The referendum is a chance to vote on several proposed changes to the constitution, but the main one would allow President Kagame to stand for another 7-year term when his current term ends in 2017, and then for an additional 2 5-year terms, allowing him to stay in office until 2034. Some of his supporters suggest the government is wasting money with this referendum, since millions of Rwandans have already petitioned for presidential term limits to be scrapped. Also, President Kagame has not made clear whether or not he intends to run again. But according to the parliament, 3.6 million eligible Rwandan voters, 60% of the electorate, have backed this petition. The one opposition party leader openly campaigning against the change, Frank Habineza, leader of the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda, says the petition was government-inspired.
We had information that was started by some people from the cabinet, some ministers, 2010.
Rwanda is widely regarded as a model of good governance in Africa. Habineza agrees that Kagame has been good for the country's development, but believes he should not stay on after 2017.
We believe that that would be a threat to sustainable peace and security. We believe that there has been a steady progress in our country, but for us to maintain that progress and economic development and so on, we need to also respect our laws.
The Rwanda researcher for Human Rights Watch, Karina Tertzakian, sees Kagame's record as mixed.
There have been real improvements in terms of development, in terms of access to public services. But in terms of respect for civil and political rights, there are still really serious concerns.
Tertzakian expects a yes vote on Friday, but questions whether this might be influenced by restrictions on political rights. Several opposition leaders and activists are currently in jail in Rwanda, and in recent years there have been attacks on opponents and critics of the government. There have been some signs of a freer media lately, Tertzakian says, with radio stations airing discussions on the referendum, for example. Another analyst commented that the Rwandan public's participation in policymaking should not be underestimated. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma, DRC.
Niger's resilient president, Mahamadou Issoufou, says his government has foiled a coup attempt and arrested several senior military officials. Issoufou appeared on nationwide television Thursday night, Niger's Independence Day. He said the plotters planned to attack the presidential palace with military helicopters just as independence celebrations were underway. Among those arrested were a former military chief of staff. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 18th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. The number one concern among Africans in 36 different countries is unemployment, according to a new opinion poll. Afrobarometer, a pan-African nonpartisan research network, on Thursday released its latest poll about what Africans see as their most important problems and their top priorities for government spending. The survey was conducted based on interviews with almost 48,000 citizens in 36 African countries, according to Boniface Dulani, Afrobarometer's field operations manager in Malawi. He tells reporter Peter Clotty the polling also showed that investment priorities vary from country to country.
We've released today results of supposed priorities from surveys that we have done in 36 countries. It would appear that across the African continent, the topmost problem that people want their governments to address is unemployment. This is really the top problem, but there's a variation in countries. Some of the countries that face food shortages, like Mali, Malawi, for example, people in these countries tend to prioritize food availability. But for the large part of countries on the continent, unemployment is what people say governments should be addressing.
Looking at your findings, how will this be beneficial to specific African countries, knowing that this was the outcome of your scientific polling?
Well, I think for a long time, you know, that often experts tend to define what the problems are for people on the continent and what the solutions are. But that has, you know, not taken the continent very far. We know issues of poverty and the, you know, lack of development remain a challenge. And I think in large part because we have not listened to the people themselves. So the surveys really give us an opportunity to give, not just us, but an opportunity to ordinary people to say what they want. And hopefully the policymakers can also take up what the people are saying and act on that rather than acting on what they themselves consider to be the priorities.
Will there be a chance where Afrobarometer will officially present its findings to specific governments across Africa? You said 36 countries, about what people see as their priority in their countries to resolve.
Yes, I think the way Afrobarometer approaches the way we approach our dissemination events is that they are first and foremost, the results are released at country level. And this is done through the media and through various functions. And we also encourage our partner organizations in each country to make presentations to policymakers and so that the policymakers can hear the people's voices. Then after we've done all that, then we reach what we call a global release, where we are releasing results that apply across the entire continent.
What other areas came up during your polling?
Well, health, for example, is also a major issue in certain countries. Education, infrastructure. In countries like Lesotho, for example, infrastructure is the top problem. In countries that have gone through a recent crisis like Kenya, Mali, and others, for example, security tends to be the top priority that people are asking their governments to address.
Boniface Dulani is Afrobarometer's field operations manager in Malawi. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. Amnesty International has called on the Ethiopian government to desist from using what it calls draconian anti-terrorism measures to quell protests over the government's decision to expand the city limits of Addis Ababa, the capital, into the Oromia region. Critics say the plan would displace local farmers and rob the area of its autonomy. Government officials have confirmed 5 people dead, but opposition leaders report over 40 protesters have been killed by government forces. Adote Akwe is the managing director for government relations with Amnesty International, USA.
I think the government is in a very defensive posture, and this is unfortunately typical. This is a regime that does not tolerate criticism or questions, both internally or externally. They have put themselves in this position because they basically denied free access to independent observers or monitors to basically ascertain what is going on. And the nature of the global community is now that transparency is much more important because the ability of people to use social media and project and share developments that are happening requires credible sources to comment on whether those images indeed reflect the whole situation. And if they don't allow that, then all you are left with is images that show a very brutal crackdown and the government statements. And the government statements in the past have been proven to be questionable as to whether they are willing to be, you know, to respect fundamental human rights and dissent.
But who's to say if last year's crackdown and the crimes that were committed against peaceful protesters were not held to account? Nobody has been charged for the deaths committed during these protests. Who's to say that the government would enforce accountability of any sort? And then also there's no independent observer within these areas. And so what would be the best way to enforce this?
Well, I think it is now incumbent on the friends of Ethiopia, particularly the United States, the UK, the European Union, all of the countries that support the Ethiopian people and the country and the government to basically really speak up in a very forcefully. The president visited Ethiopia in the summer, and there was meetings between the president and the prime minister. There was also some reports of agreement about specific reforms or specific steps that were geared at improving what is widely acknowledged to be a very poor human rights record. U.S. Department of State human rights affirmed that. But nothing has happened, and there's been no follow-up and certainly no communication about any progress towards those things. The specific event that triggered these protests might not happen again, but this is the kind of thing that happens when a government's behavior and how it treats its people is not addressed. And I would hope that the Obama administration, as well as the other governments, would basically demand an impartial investigation. They would urge the Ethiopian government to show restraint, as well as also call upon the people in Oromia to desist from any kind of violent confrontation.
Adote Akwe is Managing Director for Government Relations with Amnesty International, USA. He spoke to Horn of Africa Service reporter Salim Solomon. Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS leaders, have been urged to ban the wearing of full-faced veils, also known as burqa or hijab, by Muslim women as part of an effort to limit the growing number of Boko Haram female suicide bombings. ECOWAS President Kadri Desiree Ouedraogo told reporters at the close of a two-day summit in Abuja yesterday that countries should enforce the ban in line with their national realities. Boko Haram jihadists have, since July, started using young women and girls as suicide bombers by hiding explosives in their loose-fitting clothing. Usman Muhammad is professor of political science at Kaduna State University in Nigeria. He says while the ban may be met with resistance, particularly from conservative Muslim groups, it has worked in countries like Cameroon and Chad.
Yes, it will have some social, political dimension. Socially and culturally and religiously, predominantly Muslims wear the veil as a compulsory dress. So I think that will have some little bit of resistance. Generally, may not be accepted. And then you will have a varied opinion over that with the conservatives and then the liberals and also some other Muslim groups, such as the ones we witnessed in Kaduna that had clash with the authorities. They will never accept such orders. So you will have civil resistance in one side, and also you can have some acceptance in other side.
But do you think there should be an exception? Because the president of ECOWAS is saying that given the large number of women suicide bombers, particularly young women, he thinks that this is the best way to curtail that development.
Yes, but because it has been experimented in Cameroon and Chad and elsewhere, it had worked. And, of course, to a larger population of Muslim groups, I think there will be challenges. Except, of course, public enlightenment will have to come in there. Both international and domestic media have to come in to help in public enlightenment as to why that has to happen and for how long. It has to also happen in a way that it will be a temporary measure. How temporal, we might not know, and it might not be stated. But it will have some backlash, especially there will be demonstration probably in some place that are predominantly Muslims, and they feel that the hijab and the niqab are necessarily part of the dress of the women.
I can understand when it comes to Nigeria, Cameroon, and say Chad, these three countries have suffered tremendously from Boko Haram suicide bombing. Do you think that they should make that law to apply here in the United States, I'm sure, and in other countries where terrorism is of concern? They're also the concern by many other people that this kind of law, if it comes into being for the whole of West Africa, will infringe on the religious freedom of a lot of people. But there are other people who say, for example, security should take prevalence over religious concern. There's a possibility also that Muslim women wearing these veils may be targeted indiscriminately or discriminated against because of security concern.
Well, all those are concerns. And I believe that the freedom to exercise your religion should be done with total concern about security as well. I think where there is no security, religious practices will not even take place. So I believe that massive public enlightenment by the media and thus government have to really be embarked on so that individuals will understand this.
Osman Muhammad is the professor of political science at Kaduna State University in Nigeria. He was speaking with me from Kaduna, Nigeria. Channel 4, Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with the hockey. Kenyan defending champions Telkom Orange dismissed Ghana Revenue Authority 2-0 in the women's semifinals at the Africa Club Hockey Championship in Lusaka, Zambia on Thursday. Ghana police outclassed Egypt's Shakhtar 6-1 in the other semifinal. Telkom Orange face Ghana police in the women's final tomorrow, Saturday. Meanwhile, today, Friday, in the semifinals of the men's contest, Egyptian defending champions Shakhtar tackle Nigeria's Niger Flickers while Ghana's trustees encounter Egypt's East Company. In basketball, Angolan defending champions Recreativo de Libolo dismissed Cape Verde Islands Bear Adeseba 93-61 in the quarterfinals at the Africa Men's Club Basketball Championships in Luanda, Angola. Morocco's AS Fire outwitted Egypt's Gezira 60-47. Angola's Primero de Agosto beat Nigeria's Kano Pillars 102-60. And Angola's Petro Atletico outplayed Tunisia's Radez 74-49. Today, Friday, in an all-Angolan semi-final, Primero de Agosto play Petro Atletico, while Morocco's AS FAR challenge Recreativo de Libolo in the other semi-final. Turning to football, Mexico's Club America came from behind to pit the Democratic Republic of Congo's Orange Africa Champions League title holders TP Mazembe 2-1 at the FIFA Club World Cup in Osaka, Japan. Consequently, TP Mazembe has placed sixth at the tournament. In Kenya, the inaugural East Africa Copa International Beach Soccer Tournament gets underway in Malindi on the Kenyan coast today, Friday. The regional contest features teams from guest side Ghana, Tanzania, Uganda, Zanzibar, and hosts Kenya. Finally, in Switzerland, suspended FIFA president Sepp Blatter faced the FIFA ethics judges in Zurich on Thursday. Today, Friday, at the same venue, it is the turn of suspended FIFA vice president Michel Platini to face the FIFA ethics judges. At the heart of the case affecting Blatter and Platini is the $2 million payment Blatter made to Platini in 2011. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Voters in the Central African Republic appear to have overwhelmingly approved a new constitution aimed at stopping more than 3 years of violence between Muslims and Christians. That's it for this Friday, December 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfro, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, 2015 was an eventful year for Africa, with historic polls in Nigeria and Burkina Faso in what observers say is a new trend of democracy. U.S. President Barack Obama also journeyed to his father's homeland of Kenya and delivered a landmark speech at the African Union in Ethiopia. Also, Pope Francis preached a message of unity in his groundbreaking trip to the continent. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests review the top stories of 2015 and a look ahead to 2016. That's next time on VOA Africa.